Anytime I have an opportunity to sort of nerd out with an innovation person or startup collaborative guy, that's what I want to do. Jay Sieben is here from L Street Collaborative to talk about everything L Street Collaborative, everything innovation, everything tech in Chicago. Thank you, Jay, for coming to the show.
Thanks for having us, Scott.
Of course. Did I get your last name right? I don't get it.
Sieben. Yep, Sieben. Jay Sieben.
Why is it so difficult? It is so hard. I wrote it.
Two B's in the middle. Looks like Sieben, pronounced Sieben.
Sieben.
You know, if I keep rolling, I'm on a mission to, you know, settle that score someday, hopefully. That's what I told my dad, you know. Someday, you know, everybody will know it's Sieben, not Sieben.
Well, you know, we can only hope, right?
We can only hope. It starts here. It starts today.
It starts right here today. So one of the little side notes, we've talked about this, I bring it up to you every time I see you, is the Iowa connection. My family's from Iowa.
Yep.
I have a lot of friends that, actually, we just talked about on the way up here, Aristotle Loomis of Ware Ellison. He was the first Technori since we rebranded the show Technori Live. He was the very first guest, and he came out of—
Aristotle's great.
Yep, and he came out of the Iowa City Entrepreneur Center.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm a rabid Hawkeye. I grew up in Storm Lake, Iowa, yep, which is in the northwest corner by Sioux City, and I went to the University of Iowa, and also was the very first part of their initial cohort of their entrepreneurial program. So yep, I was the very first part of the first group of enrollees, and took some amazing classes, and that was kind of what started me on this venture. I got a degree in accounting and a minor in finance, but it was those courses that really kind of kicked off a lot of the inspiration for what I'm doing. So, I mean, that's, boy, a long time ago.
I wasn't going to ask. I'll just leave
it.
Well,
right when the internet was taking off, you know, so it was really neat. I mean, they literally started this and the internet was taking off and everybody was basically trying to figure out what was going on. I mean, literally while I was in school in the early 90s, you know, the web browser came out and then people were starting having venture classes around what do we do. And it reminds me a lot of things that are going on in other really early stage technologies right now, like blockchain and, yep, you know, other stuff that, you know, you're hearing
sensors
people trying
and wearables
to. Yeah, IoT stuff. It's kind of like you sit there and go, okay, I know this is going to be big. And I remember this being exactly like this. I remember sitting there thinking with some friends, okay, I want a business idea where I can go and order something. But I don't know. I didn't even know how web browsers worked. I wasn't a technology guy. I'm like, do I go talk to somebody in computer science? Do they know?
Yeah.
That's what was going on. Very similar to new things that are happening right now. You know what's coming. A lot of people can see the future. What they have a hard time doing is predicting when it arrives.
Yes. And I think also just like putting your thumb on like what is going to be, it's so vast, right?
It is.
What is the area that you could create something in 70% of the space in IoT and it'll be worthless forever. But if you hit it on the right space, it might be the most, you know, groundbreaking, huge success of all time.
It is. And you know, what I've tried to take up the mantle on, and this is part of what L Street is generally if you see there's something there, and you can afford to do it, meaning you could have either the wherewithal, the time, or the investment money, or the people supporting you in some fashion, it doesn't hurt to dip your toe in,
yep,
because you start learning. You're definitely going to fail. And I say that as, I mean, like literally, you will fail somewhere. Something's going to get messed up. It's definitely going to be way different than what you thought. But what I learned by not probably taking more action than I wish I would have in the early 90s, when I saw so much going on and had, you know, all these ideas and no, there was no risk.
Yeah.
I wasn't making any money, so it doesn't matter if I'm losing any money.
Yeah.
You know, is get rolling on something. And because you learn, you meet people, all that happens, you know.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, it's funny. We have kind of a similar path to this sort of world, I think. I mean, I was working in commercial real estate at the time in 2006, 7, 8, 9, and it was like, this is fine. And obviously the real estate market went down. That wasn't the reason that I left it, but it was just, there was something missing. It was all numbers and Excel sheets. And I go to Northwestern and I jumped on a project and literally stayed at Northwestern for 2 years, just like going through different master's programs, just trying to stay on this project.
Yep.
Because it was so cool. And I never thought of things from a design thinking standpoint. And that wasn't, I mean, as it turns out, I've always been a design thinker. I always got myself out of these ridiculous jams that I would put myself in personally and professionally because I would reverse engineer a solution and find my way out.
Yep.
I just didn't have a name for it.
Yep.
And so to actually see it come together, like there's a name for it. It's called design thinking, and this is something that you can practice and apply to solve problems all over the place. All of a sudden, all these problems start popping up in my head.
Yep.
And then I started what is now a 4-year mission to just solve these different problems, and it's led to Technori now. But I mean, it's kind of where you came from.
Well, it is. It's fun when you can find things that you can get passionate about. You know, we try and set the table at L Street for our team to be able to find those things and for people to find their things that their skill sets that they're that they can apply in a meaningful way that's meaningful to them. And it's hard. I mean, it's hard. There's a lot of people that are off on different paths and they don't know exactly which way to go or how to get there, or, but that doesn't feel right. And I mean, it's cliche, but you know, I certainly encourage people to, if you're feeling like you're going in the wrong direction, take a hard right, take a hard left.
Yeah.
You know, in this day and age, I mean, there's risk, don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's also risk in doing the same thing and being unhappy for a long time.
There is certainly a risk to that. I was 4 years of it, and it's, you know, it had nothing to do with the work. It was just, I felt like I was locked up in an office up in a, you know, northern suburbs, and it just get up, drive for an hour and a half, sit in a car, sit in an office, stare out the window, get in the car, drive back. It was just not.
Where's the inspiration? I mean, the number one kind of like thing that I think tells the story on whether that's happening or not is if you look at clocks, you know. If you look at clocks, I mean, I can remember when I was working for somebody, and it wasn't because necessarily I was doing work that was driving me crazy, although, you know, if you're doing accounting or finance, that can, you know, numbers.
Yeah, it makes your brain
numb. But when you're
not
doing
not
something
the,
that you think, like yeah. Me, it was I had other ideas that I like to do. But when you're looking at the clock, I haven't looked at a clock.
Yeah.
You know, and
I have absolutely no concept of time. If you ask anyone who I'm supposed to meet with,
so
they actually can
look pissed about it. That's usually the big sign of things. And if that happens, I mean, even now, I have employees, and I'm sure there's times where they have to get out. We have a pretty flexible environment, but I know that there's not a lot of clock watching going on, and that's usually a good sign that we're providing inspiration and doing important work.
Well, before we go into L Street Collaborative, you brought something up that I wanted to touch upon and figure this is the best segue in. Speaking of this, I actually just read an article, I don't know if it was on TechCrunch or what it was, but referring to sort of partially millennial, but not exclusive, to their attrition at major companies and their lack of ability to find talent and keep the talent, even keep the talent for an entire project. It's not just hiring them and losing them in a year or losing them at the end of a dev. It's literally can't even keep them in a project. And I think it reminded me of this conversation with regard to if you're looking at the clock and you're looking at the use of your time and do you feel that the people who you're working with are valuing your time as much as you value your time?
Yep.
And ultimately, it's been kind of playing a role in my head where I'm trying to think of, and we sort of briefly talked about this offline, but how do we get large companies and enterprise, you know, very wide-scaping siloed companies to start looking at this a different way and be able to create an entrepreneurial environment for those so that they're not hiring entrepreneurs. They can hire an entrepreneur, but put them to work in a practical sense rather than forcing people like you and I to be who would be great assets to a company to have to leave because ultimately I was watching a clock because you didn't let me use my brain the way that it's most powerful. You harnessed me the wrong way.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's an interesting, you know, I don't know where the answer to this is, but I feel like it's going to come down to people like you and I and companies like L Street Collaborative to work within organizations and partner with them to show them that you can build an entrepreneurial sort of segment of your company, another silo onto its own that's entrepreneurial, that you can harness and bring all these talented people who are going to be leaving you and put them in there and give them a project that they would be inspired about.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think there's a handful of different ways that you can do that. I mean, there's things that people are doing or have done in the past, you know. I mean, in the old corporate setting is let's take everybody, let's, you know, send them off to a retreat and teach them how to think outside the box. I mean, I could go on and on about, you know, the cliche things. I think the there's a couple things that are going on. Number one, and this is specifically when you're talking about technology, which is what a lot of people are talking about right now, but it really applies to just about anything. Big companies just have a hard time acting like small companies. It's just that simple. I mean, we're working with a company right now, and we mostly focus on developing our own projects, but we also, and this is partially a model of ours, to keep people on the sideline, to keep learning, and to keep having innovation happen internally as we go to other companies, larger ones, and say, hey, you know, if you're struggling to get an idea or you need to attack a problem, let's work on it together. And we'll show you how we do it, innovation-wise, and how we kind of don't let things slow us down. And then you know, you provide some of the resources. You know, when a big company, the nice thing is you can step on the gas if you need to. Their version often on stepping on the gas and our version of stepping on the gas are two different things.
Yes.
They get caught up in legal. Like for instance, I'll tell you know a story. I literally just had this with one of our customers. He was saying, we got to be careful. We can't put the cart before the horse. You know, we got all this legal stuff. And I'm like, hey, man, you know, startups don't get caught up in legal,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And speaking of cart horses, you have everybody else in the marketplace that's trying to do something innovative. And if they're in an entrepreneurial setting, they're literally standing on top of the hill. They've got the horse by the reins, and they're rolling the cart down to the bottom mm-hmm. and letting it crash and just seeing what happens, you know? So the cart's yeah. going way before the horse.
Yeah.
So I think there definitely needs to be a collaborative effort. Also, the other thing is a lot of these people that are innovative, like you and me, they don't want to work for big companies. So they're not there, and they're probably not going to come. So you need to be able to tap into resources external, bring them in, mesh it together, and figure out where that project sits. Does it lie outside? Does it lie in the middle? Or can you learn a little bit and then pull it back in?
Well, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. But I think one of the other places that I look at is the acquisition hire, right? I mean, they
yeah.
acquire there's tons of, I mean, this is going on literally every day in Chicago, thankfully, which is great, that there's small companies that are being acquired by larger companies all day long, and they basically just acquiring their dev talent for the most
yep.
part. But then they have to, so you do that, and then you put them in whatever little corner of the office, and they start having them run the same mileage that the rest of the company runs in the same pace, all of a sudden what you just acquired from a talent-wise is either going to leave or it's going to be rendered useless because you've essentially stripped them of what made them who they were. And so it's like, how do we work with these companies to enable them to, they don't have to change everything. Like you said before, it's very hard for them to act small. They don't have to act small, but you have to create some sort of separated silo that allows these people to be not operating on the same rules. I don't really even know how to describe
it.
Yeah,
I mean, I've seen, had a stake in a food company, and I think it was General Mills or somebody up in Minnesota. They set up a separate, like, innovation lab.
Yeah.
You know, Skunk Works. I mean, these have been
going
on for a
while. Chase
Bank
is doing it right now. They just
yeah.
opened up on the whatever 19th floor of the Chase building,
and they call it something else, and they send over the people over there. And I think that's one way to do it. I think that's had some success.
Yep.
And it basically becomes an innovation lab.
Yep.
You know, large companies have had, you know, Skunk Works innovation type things where basically they send their scientists or their, you know, mad scientist type people, and
yeah.
they just get to go play with a certain amount of resources, and hopefully something comes out of it. I think there's certainly some of that. You definitely have to separate it. You
yeah.
can't take people that are constrained by their normal day jobs and the normal worries and the water cooler stuff that goes yeah. on, and then say, okay, one day a week you're going to come over here and think like this. I just don't think that happens.
You know,
that
it's
doesn't
funny.
Work.
I don't. The only example that I know that it does work, and this is a very poor example just because of the size of the company, everything, in PayPal.
Yeah.
PayPal, and I've got a buddy of mine who used to run innovation for PayPal, and he literally, they built a team. They would change out pieces as needed, but he would basically go silo to silo to silo across PayPal, and they would basically say, 12 weeks, 8 weeks to get a development of something, some sort of problem and solution piece together. And if they couldn't get it off the ground and get some sort of MVP in 12 weeks, they would scrap it, put their notes down on it, and leave it in the back of the shop, and move on to the next different segment within PayPal and try to create things. Now, ultimately, what history has told us what they did was is that they took the information and acquired companies because PayPal doesn't make anything. They just acquire
yep.
other stuff.
Yep.
But point is, there is some sort of, I think that if you start off with a separation group, like you said, kind of a lab, and you get the system down and they train the people and you kind of have like a trained staff you trust, you could deploy them within your own company station to station at a certain point.
I definitely think so. You know, I mean, they've got and PayPal, I mean, still they're a big company, but
yeah.
they definitely, you know, their roots are in pretty recent engineering.
Yeah.
You know, oh, geez,
this is guy's blowing up. You're fine. No,
yeah,
it's all good.
Sorry.
Take the call. You
hey,
got
it's
deal.
Your first time on the radio here.
Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Turn your phone off.
No, it's all good.
But you know, now name your Fortune 100 or 500 company that's in manufacturing or heavy industry
yeah.
or some other, you know, thing that's not being hit right in the face with technology, that's still going to happen, and they still have to find a way to innovate. And I think it's harder for them to make that leap.
Yeah.
And so for them, like there's another venture studio-ish group in Chicago that's doing some things that I think are pretty innovative. They're going out to some large companies,
yeah.
and they're saying, hey, what, speaking to your acquihire and
yeah.
acquisition strategy, what would you guys, if you could and you had a line of sight on it, what would you buy? And once they figure that out, they're going back and then going to their investors. Okay, we're going to build this,
yep.
And so they develop this partnership, and it kind of cues that up.
And I've worked with that model in particular, and,
yeah.
and prior to the Technori thing, that's an obvious. You know, people have actually asked that. Almost every person, in fact, who has come on the show who knows Technori well is like, all right, so what's the model? Like, you know, you got like 50 startup companies in front of you. You're just going to pick them up and like try to hawk them. Like, what's
yeah.
the deal? And there are some cool, you'll get some winners in that, but unless you're building it entirely on your own, like you're suggesting, if you're going the route of sort of the build the product, find the entrepreneur to run it and get it off the ground and then hand it off to a company, it's been a challenge. But
Yep, absolutely.
Well, we've talked about just about everything except for L Street Collaborative, so it's probably time we get to L Street Collaborative. Tell us a little bit about that and what its focus is and what it's working on and how you built it.
Yeah. L Street Collaborative, we call it a venture holding company or a venture studio. It's akin to the startup studio model where we're leveraging a corporate overhead and some best practice resources and into parallel entrepreneurship projects. I mean, we're trying to build, you know, multiple companies at a handful of different stages. Hopefully they either turn into cash flowing companies that support the overall holding company, or they may get legs enough to get their own outside financing.
Yeah.
And we're mostly focused on technology. The areas that we like a lot are heavy kind of workflow, enterprise-y type things that have a, we call it kind of a consumer layer. So meaning education is one of our focuses. So we have a company that we had acquired a handful of years ago that had kind of an old line stable business in the higher ed space,
yep,
technology platform, and is administrative tool. So it's enterprise-y, but it had the students had access. So consumers had access. We're one of our startups right now. It's getting a lot of traction. It's called Crowdfind. It's really a facilities management and hospitality tool for right now, specifically lost and found management at large events and venues. Navy Pier uses it. We just did Bonnaroo, and we're doing Lollapalooza coming up, and we help basically make lost and found easier. But the tool and the platform is really for the event company, but there's a amazing consumer layer. So that's the kind of stuff we like, that we see that same thing in healthcare, open government, and things like that. So,
well, I have a little interest in Crowdfind. Maybe with Technori would be kind of cool. So
yeah,
we can talk about that.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, parting notes, what is the one thing you're looking forward to seeing in this 2016, into 2017? What's that one tech piece you're looking to build? Do you have it already? Or like what's, you know,
well, I mean, we have a couple things that we're hoping. I mean, right now, if people know about L Street, they know about Crowdfind.
Yep.
And mostly because it's a very public one.
Sure.
And it's an easy story. People,
yeah,
get their things back. We get a lot of PR and a lot of hugs.
Do they get their investments back?
Yeah. Well,
Crowdfind gives back investments as well as shirts.
We haven't given any investment, yeah, back yet. We're still using that. So, but I definitely think it's a good one. We have a couple other things that are coming down the pike that I'm hoping to get out in kind of alt education and credentialing space. A company, a project we're calling Wanderment, and another one that's in the kind of right-sized corporate resource space we're calling Pinch. Speaking to, yep, your notion before about people having to figure out how to use their resources, there's something called the fatal pinch, where you start shrinking because the economy starts going down, and then you have to let go of your best resources.
Yep.
We think we've got a platform that can help solve that. So
I'm very interested to see more about that. That's going to be a good one.
Yeah.
Very cool. Jay, thank you so much. Where do people get in touch with you or L Street Collaborative?
You can go to L Street's website. It's L Street, LSTREETC, as in cat.com, stands for L Street Collaborative. You can email me, JAY, it's my first name, at LStreetC.com, or reach out to anybody else on our team. We're always happy to hear from you. Thanks
very
a lot,
cool,
Scott.
Little news and notes here. The official June theme has been announced, as I mentioned last week, Sizzling Summer Tech. We'll be hosting Tuesday, June 28th at Chase Auditorium. So if you haven't already, make sure to grab your tickets on technori.com before it is too late. You can watch this episode and more on Advisor TV or stream us on the WGN Plus app or download each episode on iTunes. And please stay connected by following the show at Technori and follow me at Katoon. Boom, that's a wrap.